Danny, I was just going to tell you that we're about to start a recording, but I might have just told you for me. So Danny, when Joe joins, we'll get started. Has anyone else? Has anyone else joined?
It's Steve Rich.
Hey Steve, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, this is Derek Wanger from Dominion.
Hi Derek.
Hi there. To Michelle Tiemi with DNDGL.
Joe Wilmer with Dominion.
How are you? I'm not sure if someone from Gridwise is joining. I had expected them to.
Yeah, Michelle, we're on. You got Steve and myself are on the line here.
Okay, perfect.
I was on mute and talking away.
I hope it was a good conversation.
It happens too often. Joe, Danny, and Derek, were you guys expecting anybody else from your team?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it'll just be me from our South Carolina team.
Awesome. Well, perfect. Well, if I could just go through some quick logistics, and then we're always kind of tight on time. We've done almost 10 of these now, almost 10. So we kind of end up running short on time. So I want to make sure we have plenty of time. But just for Michelle and even for my and Steve background, just maybe like a quick sentence or two about your guys' specific roles at Dominion would be helpful. Just after I go through some logistics, and then we can get right into the questions. Does that sound good?
Yep.
So before we start, Danny had heard this, but I did start a recording. We are recording this call. It is only for our playback purposes so that we don't miss anything. Michelle from DNVGL is on the line, but we have a few others from her team that will be helping us craft some of these case studies. So it will only be shared internally, and it will be deleted once we're done with it. But I just wanted to let you guys know and be aware that we are recording this. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Fine.
Okay, great. So I guess just to really at a very high level here and just to why don't we just do this? If you guys wouldn't just go around and just provide just a quick introduction to your roles just so we can have a good idea of the kind of questions that we'll be asking here would be helpful. Joe, do you want to start?
Go ahead, Danny.
All right, I'll lead. So, Danny Cass is in Dominion Energy, South Carolina. So my responsibilities, title-wise, it's Vice President of Customer Relations and Renewables. So housed under me in South Carolina would be Customer Interface, Large Customer Group, Customer Service Engineering, Right-of-Way, and then in addition to that, so things that support the retail electric operations, contracts and franchise issues, and then I work on our renewable energy strategy. So I have utility scale solar, PPA, signature authority. I do customer centric solar related programs, and then I do the demand side management and energy efficiency programs are housed under me.
Great.
Joe Wilmer.
Hey, this is John.
Oh, go ahead.
Hey, this is Derek Wanger, manager of new technology and renewable programs for Dominion Energy, Virginia, and North Carolina. Responsible for really any of the small-scale interconnection, primarily net metering that we see in Virginia, as well as managing and administering the several renewable energy tariff programs that we have that kind of vary anywhere from kind of a traditional REC offset option for customers all the way up to more of a PPA or sleeving a PPA through our regulated tariff for individual C&I customers. Really in 2019, since kind of the spring time frame, been primarily focused as somewhat of a project manager on our grid transformation filing here in Virginia. I guess round two of that. I've been involved with the development of that plan and the filing since our initial filing in 2018.
Great.
Joe Wilmer, Vice President of Grid and Technical Solutions. So I have our grid planning group for load and reliability, our strategic underground endeavor in Virginia on underground and tap lines, project management, the contracts is done, and right away, as Danny had alluded to, also the energy efficiency and new tech, which includes the solar that Derek was talking about, electrification and DSM work in that area, in the design and project management groups.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us here. I think just a real quick kind of lay of the land of where GMI got to and where we're getting, moving forward here in 2019 might be helpful. And tell me if I'm wrong here, but, in the past, Dominion has either participated peripherally or we've gotten certainly some data from other utilities in Virginia and North Carolina. But from a data standpoint, I don't believe that specifically the three of you guys have participated in the data capturing in the past. Is that correct, Joe?
That's correct.
So
yeah, no knowledge in South Carolina. Yeah.
All right. So, and that's fine. And so I think what we're the purpose here today, and just to kind of set the stage, is we found that we've improved our ability to capture data over the last 4 years of doing this GMI. And what we realized in 2018 Grid Modernization Index that came out last December is that finding the real stories and finding some anecdotal insights from our utilities and from our members is really a great way to tell the story of how the pace of change is moving on different trends. And so instead of trying to capture more data this year, we're going to look to kind of refigure some of the questions next year, but really focus this year on talking about, some of the reasons that these different trends that we'll get into in a second here, what's the reason that they're happening? Is it market forces? Is it customer? Is it policy? Or are utilities taking this kind of into their own hands? And how can we tell that message to the U.S. and to regulators and to states and our stakeholders? How can we help kind of share the message of our members around changes on the grid? So the purpose of this call really is to talk about the activities and the initiatives that you guys are doing in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, and we've done that with a bunch of utilities so far. So we're getting really good feedback. We're hearing things that we have not thought that we heard. We're really hearing a lot about, stakeholder participation and even the importance of internal customers of, as these transitions happen at utilities, kind of everyone's got a role to play. And so there's just been some very good conversations. So today I think we're really excited to talk with you guys about, your resiliency projects, your DER integration. Derek, to your point, some of any kind of recent updates on the grid improvement plans. And so we appreciate you guys being here. And so I don't want to take up any more time kind of setting the stage, but, just any questions off the top before we start talking about some of your specific strategies, towards resiliency and towards kind of grid improvements. Any questions about GMI or about this purpose here of this call or moving forward before we get started?
No, I don't have any.
Yeah, no here.
I guess my only question is probably better served for the end of this call, but just thought I'd highlight now is it'd be helpful for me to understand how this information is going to be represented, I guess, on behalf of Dominion. In the various formats, and then maybe the timing around that, just given we do have an active proceeding with the commission here in Virginia. So it's just good not that I really have many concerns, but just a good awareness to have in general. But like I said,
no,
we can probably talk about that at the end.
I'll answer that really quickly just right now. That's a great question. So we're writing this paper to be released sometime in late January, either around DistribuTech or in February around the NARUC meetings or around some of the activities around that second week of February. That's the goal at this point. As far as the messages, we are looking to write GMI as far as taking a look at the whole kind of industry and the whole country, and then pick and choose different regions and pick and choose different case studies that we can insert throughout the report that help bring light and help tell the story of how the pace of change is happening. So with that said, what we talk about today, we're going to take back, and we'll probably have another follow-up afterwards in the next coming month or so. And then we'll certainly be working with you guys to make sure the messages that we are kind of getting to in GMI align with your thinking and your reasoning. So I think, should that answer some of your question there, Derek?
Yeah, that's helpful. And I thought at the time, I mean, the reason I asked really is our hearing is scheduled for January 28th. So I thought prior versions of this report kind of got released around that time frame each year. So it's good awareness. Obviously, if there's positives to draw from it, that it could be used or brought into evidence. Just if folks try to, you know, target that, the catalyst for timing, and I'm sure we'll talk about the challenges, but that's usually one that we have to defend just in general, that now's the right time, or, you know, that we're trying to move too quickly in certain areas. And this report has been referenced, I think, in discovery by us and other supporters as just evidence of kind of what's going on throughout the industry. So that was helpful.
Great. Yeah, our goal is certainly to provide the support that we can, and hopefully this paper will be able to do that. So I appreciate that. So, you know, with that said, Michelle Tiami from DNVGL, they are helping us with this report, like I said, and I think she's going to run through some of these questions here. And we'll just kind of go right through them. But if we get into any other topics or any other, you know, important facts, it's supposed to be very conversational, and hopefully we can have a good conversation for the next, you know, 40 minutes or so. So, Michelle, I'll pass it off to you.
Perfect. Thank you, Richie. And, gentlemen, just disclosure, we do your energy – I have folks who do your energy efficiency evaluation, but I'm not here in that capacity. Literally, I'm just here to help write the report and do these interviews. But I want it to be above board so you know what's going on. All right, so what is your organization strategy regarding these trends, and how does this project fit into that strategy? And I think with you, this question, we could take a couple different ways. We could do it state by state, or we could do it as what is the overarching goal, and then how do the different states fit under that goal?
Hey, Joe, I'll leave it up to you. I'm just guessing it may be just high level and then break it out by state.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, just for context, you know, the former SCANA company joined the Dominion Energy family January 1st, and Danny and I, although we collaborate on things, have, you know, we've not developed a singular strategy for Dominion Energy on the electric side of the business at this point in time. So I think, you know, Danny's right. Just talk to it state by state.
Okay.
So, you know, I guess with us, you know, obviously when the DOE was putting out their grants and things, we dabbled around in a few different things. But really the catalyst for us came in with the Grid Transformation and Security Act of 2018 in Virginia. And, you know, we've been seeing more and more renewables come on in net metering and then in North Carolina, especially with the incentives for solar development down there. We've got a vast number of utility scale solar projects that are connected to our distribution system, and really our thoughts around the grid transformation plan is really setting the stage so that we can accommodate two-way flows and provide the level of service to our customers that they deserve and demand. So we, as Derek alluded to, we filed a plan with our commission last year in Virginia to wide sweeping plan, really, to finish out our AMI system, upgrade our customer information platform, add various aspects of resiliency and self-healing network, and then things around sustainability as far as ways to integrate the solar assets and wind assets onto the system. Entrenched within that is a communications and a cybersecurity thread that goes through all things. And really the only thing we ended up coming out of that with an approval on the cybersecurity and the communication, and a request to provide greater detail and insights into the other ones before they would approve that as a prudent investment. And therefore, Derek assumed a project manager role on this project, and we started our stakeholder sessions, and we're preparing for our hearing at the end of January, as Derek had alluded to.
And how are the stakeholder sessions different this time?
Well, last time we didn't have stakeholder sessions, so they're very different. We did do updates to the commission, the attorney general, and the environmental groups, but it was basically an inward look, maybe more inward looking plan, and probably riddled with utility lingo. This one, while the components remain fairly constant, part of the order was they wanted to see a cost benefit, which is not a traditional thing for distribution investments. So we have detailed plans and a cost benefit that shows that for every dollar we're spending, we're providing more than a dollar in benefit to the citizens of Virginia. Derek, weigh in as you see fit.
Yeah, I think one of the other differences is, like you said, just as a product of our stakeholder sessions. So we had, I would argue that the hearing process last year was kind of for any program, is kind of a stakeholder process in and of itself. Where you're, folks that are interested in the case or intervening and weighing in on the positions. But what we heard from the order is that they wanted the DT plan to be shaped and represent feedback from stakeholders in its development. So over the course of the summer, we had a series of workshops, I think five about every month, on our grid transformation. So kind of starting with where we were in 2018 and refreshing with the analysis as we had it earlier this year, and getting their feedback on what their goals for kind of the grid would be, and what capabilities it should be able to perform, and kind of ask them to rank those priorities once they develop them, and kind of this 2030 vision exercise of the distribution grid. So from there, we really linked our investments in the distribution plan, both that we already had for 2018, some obvious ones around, advanced metering, intelligent grid devices, and self-healing functionality that's pretty common, I'm sure, to you guys and across most of the plans that you see across the nation, and was able to kind of add to that and show the benefits and structures of potential advanced rate offerings, time of use, peak time rebate, prepay type programs, you know, that some of these investments could enable down the road, as well as some, you know, hosting capacity maps and capabilities that are maybe smaller in cost and longer term in delivery, but again, focus more on the customer. And that kind of through those exercises, we were able to supplement our plan from 2018 and offer a lot of new content and investment activity and context in the cost-benefit analysis that Joe referenced. But I think the big theme coming out of that is that while the investments remain relatively aligned and similar to our 2018 filing, the way that we represented the investments in our plan was really leading with the customer and impacts for the customer in their day-to-day lives with each one of these investments, and then the benefits that could result from each one of those. And so that, I think that was the biggest change in tone and overall kind of feedback trend that we got through our 2018 filing, and kind of caused the biggest shift for us in this 2019 filing, and which I think has been positive. It's easier, I think, for everyone to digest.
And I think in that, what you heard also out of Derek is one of the things that the commission really wanted to know were all the benefits that something like an AMI could deliver. So the time of use rate is going to be a separate filing that's going to happen in the coming weeks. We have a DSM filing in the coming weeks. So part of our grid transformation plan also references benefits that AMI is going to deliver through those other filings and enable.
Yeah. So they'll approve the investments under the grid mod, but they want to understand what all of what is available in addition. How do those two things tie for your ultimate approval?
Well, the time of use will be a separate approval.
Okay.
But without a new customer platform and an advanced metering infrastructure, we could not do the time of use rate that we're filing for.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So, okay.
And if, just for reference, if you go out on to DominionEnergy.com and type in smart energy, a high-level educational document is out there posted as a PDF, which is our Smart Energy Grid Transformation Plan.
Okay, good.
That has a tremendous amount of information in it.
Yeah, I was going to reference that as well, Joe. And I mean, we can certainly, you know, talk through the questions in the call, but if you're looking for detail, we prepared that document to really address a lot of the same questions that you guys have posed in the invite, and serve as just kind of a document that you can read cover to cover that's not in traditional testimony Q&A format that really explains, you know, the process, our development process, including the stakeholder process that I referred to, as well as, you know, the components of the plan, why they're important, and, you know, what benefits they provide to customers. And it's prepared more than kind of a magazine-type format than it is, you know, a regulatory format, which we thought would be, one, a lot more successful in the rate that people would actually read it, including the interveners even in some cases, and really, you know, tell the story a little better.
Perfect. Anything you want me to mention on South Carolina?
Yeah, I'll try to keep this pretty simple on the South Carolina work. But I mean, everything in South Carolina is foreshadowed by our failure in the to complete our nuclear project. So you have a lot of you don't have a significant amount of work that was being done on the T&D systems, but coincidental with the failure of the company to complete the large-scale nuclear investment, we started to experience in South Carolina significant interest and ultimately adoption with renewable energy projects, either small-scale sited projects in conjunction with consumer retail load, and then some larger utility scale. So there was enabling legislation that passed in 2015, which was Act 236, which then created the initial structure for how renewables would be integrated into jurisdictions in South Carolina. So that was, it was modest at the time. And then after that, there was additional legislation that passed in 2019, which was Act 62, which was much more comprehensive, but much more pro-renewable. And so in response to the growing trend for renewables, with the failure of the large generating asset not being completed, provided for opportunities around how you integrate higher penetrations of renewables. In South Carolina, at least in our service territory, in our balancing area, we peak at about 4,600 megawatts. We have about 500 megawatts of utility-scale solar and about another 100 megawatts of private rooftop solar and commercial. So the minimum load, 200, 220 MW. So it provides an opportunity to operate the system reliably at the same time to integrate those resources. So those have been the challenges. We have a number of regulatory proceedings that we'll be walking through. We just finished an avoided cost docket, which includes a variable integration charge to begin to address some of the challenges of having additional operating reserves to be able to integrate that level of resource. Once we finish that, we also just finished a demand side management filing, which will provide for some additional energy efficiency. So one of the things that will become clear is that we spent so much resource or so much investment and so much capital on the nuclear project, there wasn't a huge amount of resource spent on other programs other than to just begin to integrate the renewables. So we don't have mass, advanced metering infrastructure deployed, although we have a regulatory order to begin that process. So that's a limitation for us. We do have, as a result of nuclear, we've got about $500 million of transmission assets that were placed into service, although they're not recovered in rates yet. But it's essentially provided a fairly resilient transmission system, much more capable and reliable than we've had in the past. But I think the ultimate benefits of the merger is to take some of the same steps I think that Virginia was able to take and that Joe and his team were able to take in terms of not only integrating the resource but also building something that's even more resilient down to the distribution level. So we've got opportunities to create programs through filings, but those will be those will be future filings. We'll file for rate activity just for basic recovery in 2020. And then after that, there'll be opportunities for additional investment opportunities, primarily at the distribution level and some at the transmission level.
Okay. So you pivoted, basically, but you had components, so it wasn't a hard pivot, it sounds like.
Yeah, so one of the responses to the nuclear failure was that that project was sold as essentially decarbonization effort. So it would have some of it was responsive to Clean Power Plan, and but as that project began to see its challenges, we were going to integrate some level of renewables. It forced us, and we did a collaborative arrangement with respect to the first piece of legislation, just to be in position in the event. It was a hedge. It really was a hedge in the event that we weren't going to be able to get to completion on nuclear. And so it was a learning experience. We were able to create some programs, community solar programs, and a few other what I would describe as customer-centric utility integration opportunities. But then we went to full abandonment in 17. We'd done most of the work that we were required to do statutorily in that first act. So the second act passed, and it was actually more of a, an attempt by the renewable community to, address, more blunt tools like additional QF solar and other things that become a little more challenging. So we're working through some of the issues around that act, but it is more of a, it's less of a utility tool and more of a renewable energy developer favorable legislation. In all likelihood, there needs to be another iteration of the legislation which addresses grid mod, the creation of additional hosting capability, the absorption of additional investment on the utility system. So it's I would describe the initial response in 236 as being more reasonably collaborative between all parties, that were interested in supply, demand, and the energy delivery system. And then the second iteration is there's some tools in there, but it's going to take it is definitely more pro renewable energy friendly, for sure, and less utility friendly.
And I guess the opportunity then would have hard data to say, look, the penetration is increasing, and the grid, in order for it to be reliable and customer centric, we're going to have to make these investments.
Yeah, I think there's really two obvious places. One is that the creation of additional hosting capability, and then it's just the balancing of the system through operating reserves and other tools, such as potentially storage and what I would call much more collaborative contracting for the resource. So the opportunity's there. I think the one thing that we've probably done that's probably utility friendly is we've in our rates, especially with our avoided cost rates and ultimately with our customer sided projects, we've created this concept of a variable integration charge that addresses the impact of the intermittent resource to the grid. And so it essentially requires that the seller cover the cost for the impacts to the system. It creates a construct where in the end of the day, either the charge has to be paid or it has to be addressed in a way which could reasonably be the utility making additional investments and being allowed recovery in lieu of the seller paying those charges. It's, you see it in other markets. I think we, we probably are going to end up with one of the higher charges. We're waiting on the outcome of the avoided cost docket. The order, the actual written order, comes out before the end of the year. But the motion has already been put in place to have about a $2.39 per megawatt hour charge.
That's fascinating. And I love the duality where you can decide. Awesome. All right, I'm going to jump down because you've covered a lot of these. I'll jump down to how do you define success? And what metrics are you...
Michelle, did we lose you?
No, did you not hear that, Richie?
No, well, we got the first part of defining kind of success, and then I think you were just kind of going to clarify, you know, there are different levels of kind of defining success, but, you know, maybe in each state, I think we might have missed what you were saying at the end, Michelle, but if I capture it correctly, you know, trying to figure out how are you guys, you know, seeing what does success look like in 2019 and moving forward in 2020, you know, past maybe KPIs and things like that. How are you guys kind of defining if the work you're doing to advance some of these improvement plans is working?
Well, I mean, I think I'll speak for us in Virginia. I mean, given we're still in the regulatory process, success looks like at least a partial approval and allowing us to get off the ground. We it's a prudency review that we're in right now. That, you know, if certain elements were deemed prudent and reasonable, rate filing would follow, as would, you know, the kind of construction and project initiation aspects of what we want to do. So that's kind of to be determined. The order is due in March 2020. But we have filed kind of more specific, I guess, is we filed prudency review for phase one, which we've defined as the first 3 years of a 10-year grid transformation plan. Being 2019 through 2021. So, you know, that's how I personally would define success, obviously. It's a favorable
for all your hours.
Regulatory outcome.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, success to us next year looks like we have entered the implementation phase. Now, I will clarify, in North Carolina, much like we do with our DSM programs and things like that, North Carolina follows Virginia. So as we get approval for the 2.1 million customers or 2.5 million customers in Virginia, then we have that whole northeast part of North Carolina that we would then follow up with our plans down there and that is part of our plan, like for AMI to do the entire 2.62 million customers.
Okay. We do have a proceeding as well in North Carolina. It's called the Smart Grid Technology Plan. It's something they've asked for of all North Carolina utilities, I think, over the last several years. But to Joe's point, I mean, Duke's has been pretty comprehensive. Ours has been pretty brief and really just confirmed what Joe just mentioned, that we have an active proceeding in Virginia. We intend, you know, to really follow that path for North Carolina, but it'll be dependent on us getting started in Virginia.
Okay.
Just wanted to reference that in case you wanted to reference that docket called the Smart Grid Technology Plan.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so for South Carolina, you know, we're, again, you know, referring back to kind of my prior remarks, I think our limitations with respect to capital has handicapped us, but I think for success is likely positive outcomes related to a rate case in 2020 with emphasis on mass deployment of advanced metering infrastructure, and maybe reasonable compromise positions around the renewable piece. I think that's all that's ripe for adjudication. I think we're going to see numerous appeals and at request for reconsideration by developers, but I think there's actually a sweet spot that where renewable developers and the utility can create something that's more that's more collaborative, like the work that was done in 14 and 15, where I think people are starting to recognize that the utility's investment in the energy delivery system is their space, but it's mutually beneficial to consumers if you want to pursue decarbonization and other avenues that appear to be in the best interest of the jurisdiction and the state. So it's just we're just going to not be as advanced. I think it's likely that there's a legislative strategy that follows Virginia's strategy, but mm-hmm. I think that's still to be determined. I think it's I look at 2020 as a year of progress in terms of the integration with the broader enterprise, but with opportunities to make small steps to then get to what I think is the next opportunity.
Well, and it sounds like you can communicate that the investments needed have to be timed. You can't be, it has to be in parallel. Otherwise, you get the stool, the uneven stool approach, which is not going to help anybody, including the developers.
Yeah, I think there's, I think post this initial outcome of the avoided cost docket, I think that's become clear that the this piece of legislation that was maybe, you're right, more favorable, or what I would call it is imbalanced, and it's not as fair as balanced as it probably could be from a broader energy policy perspective. I think it leads you back to, the strategies that we employed to get to push it back towards the center, I think were effective, or at least they appear to be effective. That's pre request for reconsideration. So, but it appears as if it's going to force the issue, I think, which then puts us back in a, I wouldn't describe our position as being leveraged at all. I would say it would be an opportunity to then create something in concert with current utility model, which advocates for good investment.
Yeah, no, I think that I expect you'll have success. What did you learn? What have you learned thus far, and what surprised you?
South Carolina first?
Sure.
I think probably shouldn't have been surprising, but I think it still was. I think the appetite for additional options around renewable choices. We have had some experience with some customized programs and had done some some contracting around really narrow customer interests, but you couple what ended up being negative energy policy with maybe an option, so the appetite for hedging strategies against rising retail rates and opportunities for self-generation, I think those were ultimately much more aggressive than I think folks recognize. We were able to do, we created a community solar program, for instance, that was, at the time, it might have been the largest in the country. It wasn't, by today's standards, not huge, but it was 16 megawatts and 15, which was a lot different than what people were doing back then in terms of smaller increments. But, I mean, we were able to sell that out within a matter of months. And although it was, you know, subsidized, that generally showed the appetite for people to want to do things that are different, which in, you know, in the end of the day, if that's space that the utility can get in and be willing to accept that their standard model becomes slightly disrupted, it's still not bad space to work in if your customers still want to conduct business with you, which in, I think in South Carolina still makes sense.
Yeah, that's real good. Okay. Anything
I think in Virginia, I guess the most summarized version of what we learned was kind of in the commission's final order that we got from our 2018 filing in January of this year. And they provided some good direction and made it clear, really, that the legislative, you know, direction and public interest declaration isn't enough, is that, you know, which we knew, but and even in order to deem the investments in the plan prudent, they wanted, you know, extensive amounts of detail similar to what they're used to seeing over the last several decades for generation hearings and generation stations, and that's what that looks like, is the designs and scopes of individual distribution transformation projects, the contracts that support the work, just to ensure that, you know, the cost and the plans are firm, especially for something as long-term in nature as, you know, what we filed. Even though, you know, the difference is with a generation project, it's one big unit and, you know, made it comprised of numerous other contracts, scopes of work, and projects within it, and it's complex. Distribution is seemingly millions of very tiny projects, and really the detail they were looking for, I don't know that they knew when they asked the extent of the volume of information and time it takes, you know, to craft the detail they were looking for. But nevertheless, we went through a really extensive engineering and design scoping period since the final order to provide that level of detail for each of the grid transformation projects. Where that was applicable, we issued, I think, over 20 RFPs, even a lot of which were just kind of a refresh of information that we'd leveraged in the prior filing, but just to make sure that we had the most current view of the market and costs and alternatives to present and really ensure that our costs were firm. And then how important stakeholder feedback and endorsement was, which, again, is, I think, is something we knew, but the process that we undertook this summer is definitely something different for us. I think it's different from what most utilities have done, and just the level of transparency that we provided in our development of the plan, and really the level of influence that was produced kind of on their behalf and based on their feedback, and how that led to true changes within the plan that we filed in 2019. You know, that's really what the commission asked for in the order, and we've certainly learned a lot from that process, you know, that's really transpired from January till September, right up until we filed. I think we had our last stakeholder meeting about 2 or 3 weeks before we filed, and it was basically a preview of the filing, and it's just kind of a summary of, you know, where we kind of had evolved to as a stakeholder group over what was about 4 or 5 months. I think that was the biggest thing we learned. But like I said, we're in an active proceeding, so we're still learning every day.
Yes. And managing the And just because it's submitted doesn't mean that you don't keep on managing those relationships, right?
That's right. Joe, we got another set of discovery while we're on the call. So from one of our key accounts. So that's timely.
Hey, so Michelle, I might just add this for South Carolina, but I meant to include it with my first comments. But I mean, the other thing is how much actual resource, you know, most of the work that had been done around renewables had been, you know, how much resource there had been a lot of theoretical work that had been done, but how much resource you could actually integrate, you know, on some of this must take option. So, I think we're a living example of at least how much you can start to take. It doesn't, you know, but it starts to mimic some of the stuff that's happened in some of these theoretical studies, like the TECO study with First Solar and some of the other. Just how much of it can be, how much of it can you actually take while still creating an operating reliable system? So the idea that, yeah, you might be able to take a little bit of it, I think you can, you know, with proper work and with proper investment, you can take a lot more of it. But it takes work to be able to integrate it, for sure.
Right, and planning work. That's great.
You know, as Derek talked through there, I'd summarize that would be that, you know, I don't think any of us really knew what the others expected out of a prudency filing. The commission, the company, and the interveners were all in a different space.
Yeah.
And the one thing that we got out of the stakeholder engagement was we really got to understand points of view. For instance, one environmental respondent at one of the last stakeholder meetings says, I get why you want to do resiliency. It's just my constituency doesn't care about that at all.
Mm.
But it was very, we got to a better place about talking about where we were instead of talking around the issues.
Okay. That must have been illuminating, yeah. And I want to be mindful of time. What would you want other utilities to know? Maybe the laggards as they start their journey.
If they haven't started or initiated a kind of a formal stakeholder process, start now, start yesterday.
Okay.
Agreed.
I think there's some great lessons. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I'd say agreed.
Okay. Yeah, I would say there are plenty of good lessons in other jurisdictions to correct things that others did that you would then you have the opportunity, I think, to do differently. So, for instance, when we did the first piece of legislation in South Carolina, strategically it was easy to look at what happened in Hawaii and some of the way they created basic metering infrastructure. In South Carolina, every net metering customer has 2 meters. So that the utility could then reasonably understand what was actually being exported and could model around it. But that's just a simple thing. And we looked at, for instance, Arizona. And Arizona was going under the same continuum, you know, the chronology that we were undergoing in 14 and 15. They did it in 08. And actually APS had information about, you know, kind of this is how strategically you should deal with some of this, some of the DERs. They never executed on some of it, but there's stuff out there that's already it would be very beneficial to somebody that hasn't taking some of those steps. I agree with Derek and Joe. If you ignore it, somebody else will write a bunch of rules for you that you're not going to like. you need to get ahead of it.
Okay, good. And then want to drop down to the trend. So you talked about trend two, which is the resiliency, and about the transformation. Anything you want to add on trend one, which is preparing for electrification of the transformation?
I think I don't know if it's as much trend one or maybe just throughout, but emphasizing the importance of education for both customers, stakeholders, and the regulatory bodies. They're just not used to seeing distribution proceedings or analyzing, I think, in the same level of detail, distribution investments. So don't assume that they fully, but you know, when I'm going to say they, I mean, you know, the average customer, the regulatory bodies are just stakeholders, environmental advocates. Don't assume that they understand, you know, how the grid works today and how that's different for every individual utility. For instance, we're a 34.5 kV distribution utility, which, you know, that right there distinguishes us quite a bit from some of the generalized assumptions that one could read, you know, from other electric utilities or distribution utilities around the country. And you really have to start from square one and ensure that there's a good basic level understanding of how things work today before you can take the leap of describing where we need to go. I think that was something that we didn't emphasize or focus on enough last year. And, you know, through the stakeholder process, that became clear at meeting one. And really where we ultimately focused for quite a bit before we even talked about what we wanted to do differently.
Isn't it interesting, you know, I used to work at CenterPoint, and, gosh, we had a hard time even just talking about energy. And now, 10 years later, people want to be part of the process. So at least, you know, at least I think we can say that success as well, is that we're not begging people to pay attention to electricity.
Right, which has, I think, been a positive. But if no one's talking about it, then things are usually good. But that hasn't really, you know, served us well through this process, just given the level of education and background that we've had to provide, which is important. It just, you know, adds to the timeline.
Yep,
Tom,
I think that's good.
Yeah, Michelle, I might add a point about item one. I think it's from the entire enterprise, I think Dominion is bullish on the transportation opportunities. But I think this might be the one thing that kind of forces everybody to begin to deal with what I would describe as advanced resource planning. So if you think of, you know, integrated resource plans, and you think of supply side, and then you think of, you know, maybe some investments that you might make in the T&D side, I think this is the piece that actually, because it's so impactful to the distribution system and ultimately to the demand side, depending upon how, you know, the model evolves, it forces you maybe to get to what I would describe as advanced resource planning. So instead of having it done in smaller silos and then adjudicated a little differently at the commissions, I think it's got the ability to really change, I think, the way total planning gets done for the utility, which then, again, is, to me, it speaks of just a great opportunity, again, for utilities to continue to be, you know, relevant, because none of this stuff works without an energy delivery system that is reliable.
Yeah, well said. They pull out quotes.
I'd add on to, you know, for years we did did the things we do and we did them well, and we didn't have all this interest in interveners in these cases on the distribution side of the business. But I think one of the things that I think utilities have got to understand, and I think Danny talks to this, is, you know, we provide solutions. You know, somebody coming into this new, don't start out saying, well, if we put all this distributed resources on the system, the system's going to go to hell. It's, if we manage our way through it and do the planning that we know how to do and work with these stakeholders, we can come out with a better product at the end of the day for everybody. Less cost, higher reliability, more functionality, and it's really about looking for those solutions. So if the way you approach it with those stakeholders is very important. You got to be coming in there with planning and a solution, not, I need to do this because you're hurting my system.
Right. It's a difficult process. Fabulous. Gentlemen, this has been terrific. I'm looking forward to writing this up.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
we will work with you as we're getting closer to writing it up and publicizing. We'll definitely.
Michelle, I think we can kind of catch some of it. Guys, it sounded like we're kind of wrapping up here. Michelle, we were kind of breaking in and out. But
they will only circle back with them really on as we get closer to, well, for sure, just clarification, and then as we get closer to publication.
Absolutely. And guys, I think, you know, as some of the utilities that we've talked to have started to provide maybe some specific projects that maybe help illuminate some of the messages, you know, in this case, you know, just getting started or getting moving is a really interesting message that might come out from some of the conversations here. But, you know, in the coming months as this gets developed, you know, if there's any updates on the electric bus fleet projects, Joe, or any other kind of specific projects that we can point to of, you know, things are moving and it's important to get, you know, it's all moving at different paces, but here are some things that are moving and we've already gotten some successes from. You know, that's the kind of stuff we'll be looking for in the next couple months. So just a heads up on next steps.
No, that's good.
Well, great. Well, I hope you all have a nice holiday, and we'll be in touch about clarification, and looking forward to seeing you guys in a couple weeks here at Grid Connect as well.
Yeah. Hey, it's you know, Steve's in this week.
Steve. I am.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, any chance you'd give me a call?
Yeah. Who's this?
This is Joe.
Okay. Oh, Joe, sure. What's your number, Joe?
Cell phone's probably best, 804-338-4292.
4292, got it.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Well,
thanks, guys. You'll have a good Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks,
guys.
You too. Thanks.